Hey, it's Mike from Go Cell Phone Repair, and this is the weekly live stream where we talk about phones and phone repair stuff. I want to take a minute to offer condolences to the victims and families in Las Vegas who were affected by the tragic events that took place yesterday. That's obviously not what this channel is about, but just a horrific incident that I think is probably on everyone's mind today. So this might be a very short live stream for a couple of reasons, and also I'm having some technical issues. So if you're in the Las Vegas area, they are saying that they do need blood donations. So if you're nearby and are able to do that, in particular, it looks like O negative is in demand right now. I'm not very close to Las Vegas, unfortunately, but I will be donating all of the proceeds from my channel for today. Beyond this live stream, anything that I earn in revenue on YouTube, I will be donating to whatever funding will be able to assist those victims. Just some senseless things going on. Hello, Basket Bro, how are you doing? So it's kind of hard to segue from that into anything, I'll be honest with you, but let's just try to switch gears a little bit. So iPhone 8 batteries, not exploding, but apparently swelling up. Now, I heard this news last week. They were saying that, iPhone 8s are exploding and all sorts of stuff. And then someone came back and said that wasn't really happening. And it was kind of questionable as to whether this was true or not. So I'm going to flip over to the browser here real quick just to take a look. This is going to be from BGR.com, and they've got some photos here. These photos have kind of been passed around all over the place, so it looks like I can't see what the source is. But one in Taiwan and one in Japan, apparently a lady said that she got her iPhone 8, took it out of the box, used the OEM charger, and within a few minutes, the battery started to swell up and push the screen out from inside the phone. And then apparently this other person who was shipped their iPhone 8 in Japan ended up opening up the box and the battery was already swelling up. Now, we've obviously been seeing this happen for quite a long time. You know, I think the first one I ever saw was probably the iPhone 3G. So outside of the 2G, I think every battery that I've seen from an iPhone over time will eventually swell up. And this is, you know, not just Apple, obviously. This is a number of different brands. BlackBerry comes to mind, but we've seen just about every brand of battery will swell up over time. But to have a brand new phone that's doing that obviously is going to be a problem. Now, down here in the article, they are saying that the battery inside the iPhone 8 that had problems appears to have been manufactured by Amperex Technology Limited. It's the same company, supposedly, who supplied some of the batteries for the Galaxy Note 7. And it shouldn't be a cause for concern, because as long as these are isolated incidents, you won't have to worry about your phone exploding. And to be fair, you know, out of the millions of phones that go into production, obviously there are going to be some manufacturing flaws. It's kind of interesting that they're using the same battery supplier that Samsung had those problems with. However, in the case of Samsung, the blame apparently lied with the design of the phone and not the battery itself. Whereas here, it doesn't look like the design of the iPhone 8 is a problem, but rather the battery instead. So again, you know, out of the number of phones that were shipped, which I'm sure are in the millions, if not tens of millions, to have two of them have problems doesn't seem like too big of a deal. Time will tell, of course, if this becomes something serious. You know, in the long run, it could be real bad news for Apple if this is a trend that we see developing with the new iPhones. But hopefully that's not going to be the case, and hopefully no one's home or anything else catches fire. Hello, gosh, I need to make this chat bigger so I can read this. Hello, Jose Nildo, Brazil. I hope I pronounced that right. Hello to you too. This is awesome. A lot of people from Brazil I end up seeing on the channel, which is really cool, or in the chat. And other parts of the world too. So yeah, iPhone 8, that's pretty crazy. Obviously it's very early and very difficult to say if this is going to be a thing, you know, that we need to be concerned about. But it's kind of weird that, you know, it wasn't until I've seen this happen a lot. And of course the battery swelling up is supposed to be a safety feature. So because it has that flexibility and it's able to expand, when there's a chemical reaction inside of the battery and those gases start to be released, instead of building up and exploding, it actually just forces the outer edge, you know, the out the outside of the battery to kind of swell up, which is better. But you know, obviously, if it destroys your phone, hopefully that is covered by the manufacturer's warranty. But really weird, you know, that now we're seeing all these exploding batteries, and it wasn't something that was happening a lot 5-6 years ago, but now it seems to be like a regular occurrence. So just a lot more phones out in the wild, I suppose, could be part of the reason why. Now here's something interesting. T-Mobile apparently is once again talking about merging with Sprint, which could be good or bad news. Probably depends on the way that you look at it. We know that Hello from India. Wow, that's pretty far away too. This is really cool to see people from all over the world coming on here. T-Mobile, Sprint, probably a good idea in the U.S. You know, both of those carriers are kind of third and fourth position when it comes to coverage. So if they're able to unite and share their networks and start building out more complete coverage, that would be awesome. You know, despite what the commercials will tell you, Sprint does not have 99% of the coverage that Verizon does. And T-Mobile apparently just got caught recently for making some claims that were not completely accurate. So there's an ad watchdog group, and they are part of the Better Business Bureau. I should say that up front, because Better Business Bureau has some very questionable practices themselves. And I won't go into great detail here, but I am very skeptical about a lot of what the Better Business Bureau does. I could probably do a complete podcast out of that, so take it for what it's worth. It's coming from them. They have a division called the National Advertising Division, which apparently keeps track of truth in advertising and tries to hold people accountable for claims that they make. And what they're saying is that despite what T-Mobile advertised, they do not, in fact, have a faster LTE network than Verizon does. So they're kind of having to shut down that claim. They're not going to be making that claim anymore. I don't know if they're going to make a public retraction, but they have agreed to stop using this apparently biased testing parameters that were making them, you know, feel like they could say that they were faster than Verizon, where if you took a look at the entire map and the whole, you know, the big picture, that wasn't entirely true. So they are not going to be able to say that anymore, apparently. But once again, you know, when I talk to people who have different carriers, which I do on a regular basis, you know, you'll typically get a very consistent customer experience stories. You know, oh, I have Verizon. I love that I can use my phone when I go on vacation because they have towers up, you know, at some cabin or on the beach or wherever. So when their network, when it comes to reaching places that not many people get to, most Verizon customers will tell me that one of the reasons they chose that carrier is because they do have better service in a lot of areas that other carriers don't have. You know, AT&T typically ends up coming in second, close second behind Verizon when it comes to coverage. And then when it comes to carriers like T-Mobile, or anyone who runs on the Sprint network, which would be Sprint, Boost Mobile, Virgin, you know, Ting. There's a number of other resellers, obviously, that are branded, but actually using the Sprint network. We do get a lot of customers saying that there are some areas that they wish they had better coverage in. And while T-Mobile also has some challenges when it comes to coverage in certain areas, we get a much more positive response from customers when they talk about their customer service experience. So a lot of the people that I talk to who have T-Mobile and have had them for years always want to say, you know, T-Mobile is the greatest. When I call them, they take care of me. Their reps in their store are awesome. You know, so it's like, it seems like every carrier kind of has their strength, you know, what it is that they do right. And I think that in Sprint's case, at least at this point in time, they tend to be one of the companies that is able to resell to other carriers at a low monthly fee, but they definitely have some network challenges. So if they're able to get together with T-Mobile, that could be good. It could be a good overall customer service experience, depending on who's really going to be in charge of the company at that time. Is it going to be SoftBank? Is it going to be Deutsche Telekom, who actually owns T-Mobile? Don't really know the specifics of that. But one thing that somebody brought up earlier is that, you know, it could actually get worse for some reasons, just depending on how they go about it. Are they going to shut down the CDMA network? Is everything going to go to LTE? You know, that's kind of the plan. Is everyone who has a Sprint phone going to have to get another phone if they transition? Kind of like when T-Mobile came in and bought out Metro. You know, it was, you have a Metro phone, it's not going to work anymore. You have until such an, you know, till this date to get a compatible GSM phone to run on the network. So if you're a Sprint customer and you just bought an iPhone 8 and they say, well, we're going to be switching over to, you know, whatever, obviously that phone can be unlocked, but there are going to be a number of other handsets that may be specific to Sprint that might not be compatible with T-Mobile's network or vice versa. And hopefully they don't go the opposite direction and try to go from GSM to CDMA. That wouldn't make any sense, obviously. Everything should be LTE at this point, right? Hello from Sacramento, Kaisar. How's it going, man? I have been meaning to follow up and talk to you guys and see what's going on. What's up, Beha? Oh, this is cool. So I have a couple people who were previously in my training for phone repair. Kaisar out of Sacramento, starting up. I want to see, was that with your cousin that came in, getting into the phone repair business, which is awesome. Also, Beha from out in Tracy now, who went to training, what it was like 2 or 3 years ago, I think, quite a while back, right? Kind of just hit the ground running, ended up starting his own business, has a very successful cell phone repair store in Tracy. And I don't know if you have multiple locations or not, Beha, speak up if you do. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm glad you guys could come on here and spend a little time talking about phone stuff, which is, you know, what I live for. Oh, and actually, I have some training coming up this month. Let's see. Today is the... I got confused on the dates on this live stream also. Today's the 2nd. I want to say it's the 11th. How could that be right? Let me go to my... Let me pull up my page real quick here and see when my next training is, because what we do... Just in case anybody's curious. We have a cell phone repair training that we do. It is a 4-day-long program. It happens in Antioch, California this month. It's going to be October 17th through the 20th. Who needs to go to cell phone repair training? Well, anyone who wants to get some hands-on experience, coaching, become familiar with what type of tools to use, where to get them from, and really have kind of a repair dojo where if something gets damaged, you're not dealing with the customer's device. So in my, oh, I forgot to hit my lights. In my opinion, this is, you know, we have all levels of skill. We have entry level people who have come in, never worked on phones before. And we have people who have some experience, but would like to get more. And, you know, more recently, I talked to someone who had basically way more experience than someone should have when they come into a basic cell phone repair training. So it all kind of depends on where you're at, and that's correct. I had a guy call from Alaska, and I actually talked him out of coming in because he's in business now fixing phones already, and what he was looking for was an advanced level course where we do more micro soldering, liquid damage treatment, and data recovery, which is not something that we currently offer. So believe it or not, even though I do plug my business on occasion, I always screen anyone who comes in and make sure that it's going to be a good fit for the people who are asking for the training, because obviously we want to make sure that you benefit from what you're getting. I have to recommend to one of my classmates, he's attending your training course on November. Awesome. Hey, thanks. I certainly appreciate that. If you know someone who's interested and they know what they're getting into, I will absolutely every month be having the training in Antioch. It is a 4-day program and will take you from diagnosing customers' problems, modular component repair, and you know, beyond that. What we try to focus on is what we actually see coming into the store the most often. So typically about 80% of the repairs that you perform are going to be covered in the course. And then of course, when you leave, if you want to advance beyond that, that is entirely up to you. Plenty of people who are doing still screen repair, charge port repair, battery replacement, and so forth, and selling accessories and making a successful business out of it, which is cool. And for some reason, one of my pages just closed. Let me reload this real quick. Let's see, that was my next topic that I wanted to get through real quick here, because again, I don't know how long this is going to last, and hopefully this looks decent on your end, because my video ingestion settings were all set up and ready to go, and for some reason, every time I start broadcasting on YouTube, things go goofy on me. I don't know why. Yes, sir, it's been a couple of years. Best trainer ever. Thank you. I appreciate that. I am flattered. Continue to learn from you. This day we have 2 locations. Okay, so Beha's got 2 locations, working on a third. Yeah, and the same advice I give to most people when they say, you know, is this now a good time to get into phone repair business? I have a simple answer for you, and that is, if you're willing to work, yes. Okay, there will always be motivated people who can overcome obstacles and who will accept challenges and adapt depending on what the market presents to us. You know, whether that means expanding into tablet repairs or doing laptops or doing accessory sales or doing phone activations, whatever it is, there is a way to continue to prosper in this business. Now, if you say, hey, I want to fix iPhone screens and that's all, then I would say you might want to consider, you know, what other revenue streams you're going to have coming into your business, because you can't just do iPhone screens indefinitely. At some point in time, you're going to run into competition. You're going to run into something goofy that, you know, Apple may get even weirder than they already are about their devices and matching things like facial recognition to the camera, to the phone. And we want to be prepared for that. We want to make sure that there are other things that we can do in order to keep that money coming in if we want to stay in business. So your attitude and your motivation and really your quest for knowledge beyond the basics will be what determines how successful you are in, I think, any business, but especially with something that has a very rapid or a rapidly changing landscape like anything that's related to tech for the most part. Hello from Argentina. That is cool. So we're in the same time zone. I know that. Other side of the world, India, it's probably like pretty early in the morning, I would imagine, by now. And I actually had, I'll get to that in a second. I had someone who asked me about doing different times. And, you know, it's hard to pick like the right time for everyone. But I appreciate everyone who is able to show up today. Now, this is an interesting headline I saw. The court rules the FBI can keep the names of and the payments made to the iPhone 5C hacker secret. Now, if you remember a while back, I think it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago, we had this San Bernardino terrorist case where they found this iPhone which had a passcode on it. And supposedly, or allegedly, the FBI went to Apple and asked them to create a backdoor for that handset so that they could get the information that, you know, might have been related to this crime that was stored on there. And Apple very publicly said, no, we are not going to compromise our security or our encryption keys or anything like that, because if we do that for this one phone, then any other phone like that that has the same software version could be hacked using whatever, you know, whatever methods they're able to come up with to break that encryption could then be used on other phones of similar models and software versions. So, you know, there were two sides to the story. Obviously, we all want to stop terrorism. We want to catch the bad guys. We want to figure out what they were up to, you know, hopefully before they carry out any crazy stuff like this. And at the same time, we want to protect our privacy. So it's a very, you know, weird balance that we have to work with here. So meanwhile, the FBI obviously was very resourceful. They went to a third party and figured out a way to hack into this iPhone 5C. And then about a month or so later, a student, I want to say at a university, I can't remember where, figured out a way to do it from his home. Now, no easy task, but he realized that, you know, if you have the equipment and the time and you really want to get into something, you can figure out a way to get in. And then I think the guy from that really annoying antivirus company came on, and what is his name? Is it McAfee? I think it's John McAfee came on and said, hey, here's how you do it. It's easy. All you have to do is build this, you know, a disk. Clone the disk and you have unlimited attempts and stuff. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Well, in any case, they finally got in. And now they're saying that they don't have to disclose who it was, you know, what third party it was. And I strongly suspect it was the Cellebrite company, the same company that makes the data recovery and data transfer, or not data recovery, but data transfer devices that we plug phones in to back up address books and text messages and that kind of stuff. And I'm not sure why it really matters, you know, if we would need to know where they got this information was, but that was the rumor. And I strongly suspect that was the company that did it. But in any case, I don't know why this is such a big deal. It's like, you know, there are certain things that probably should be disclosed, but when it comes to something like this, where we're dealing with sensitive information, they have something called Freedom of Information Act, I believe it is. And that was kind of what was in question. And also the amount of money that they spent going after this information. So supposedly Dianne Feinstein might have accidentally revealed the price tag, which was like $900,000. And if I remember correctly, they didn't really come up with anything, you know, usable off of that device, which really isn't here nor there. You know, if there was a potential to recover something that would have tracked down part of this terrorist network, then by all means, you know, let's do it and save lives. But it's kind of weird that they're coming out and saying now that they don't have to disclose who it was. I don't really see how that matters, but apparently that's a thing. Hi from Zimbabwe. What do I think of the iPhone 10? Josenildo Olivero. See you soon, my friend. Thank you. Okay, cool. I hope to see you again. Viewer's Kitchen, Zimbabwe. What do I think of the iPhone 10? I don't have the iPhone 10. I would be very interested in testing it out. I have a hard time investing that amount of money on a device. However, judging by the sales and the reaction to the iPhone 8, I think that the iPhone 10 is going to be a big deal. I think they are going to sell a surprising number. You know, I was very skeptical about how many people are going to go out and drop a grand on this phone. And they're already saying that most of the people that they talk to are planning to buy the 264 gigabyte version. You know, really, I got to tell you, I'm pretty simple, believe it or not. You know, despite working on phones for a living, when it comes to phones, what I'm really after is something that has a good battery. Like, that would impress me beyond almost any new feature that's coming out. You know, the little emoji face thing was cute, but really, functionality-wise, that's not going to do a lot for me. Unless I'm trying to convey a message to someone and they'll really understand it. As far as facial recognition goes, you know, I think that there's going to be a large number of the population who thinks that is the best feature ever. You know, anyone who uses Touch ID at this point, hey, this is even better. You just aim the phone at your face and it unlocks. That's great if you're in favor of that. Personally, I don't put my fingerprints or my, you know, retinal scan or facial recognition or anything into any database anywhere. I don't send my DNA off to find out where I came from. You know, I'm not really concerned with that kind of stuff. And it's a little creepy, to be honest. But, you know, if that's something that you find useful and you have no reservations about using, then by all means, it's really kind of cool, you know, that they're able to do that with the facial recognition. I got to say, the one thing that I don't like is that little gap at the top where they've kind of, you know, there's this big push to utilize every bit of real estate on the front of the phone. I think that getting rid of the home button is an excellent idea, like one of the best ideas that Apple has had in a long time. Get rid of the home button, you know, and if nothing else, have a customizable home button that you can put wherever you want. I'll give you an example if I can find my phone. So on this phone, I have a home button down here, which is a very unnatural place for my thumb to go. You know, your thumb starts up here, and to reach down here and grab the home button is kind of ridiculous. Now, if I could just have a, you know, a non-physical touch home button right here, right where my thumb is, and of course, it would have to be customizable, because if you're left-handed, you want it to be over here. Why not put the home button within reach instead of having this awkward movement where you have to come all the way down here? You know, you almost have to reposition your hand to press on the home button. So, I love the fact that they're getting rid of the home button and they're going to more effectively use all this real estate down here. As far as the top goes, you know, I would be fine with two things. And again, this is my personal opinion, obviously. And I will say probably the best thing about the new iPhones, the 8 and the 10 included, will be the camera. I am excited about the cameras. I've heard very good things about them. My nephew actually pointed out to me, however, just yesterday, that there are still no pro settings on the iPhone 8 camera. So you cannot adjust the exposure level and the focus simultaneously. It's like it does that automatically for you. And this is one frustration that I have with doing any photography with this phone up close. And that is, if there's anything shiny or reflective in the image, I can't just override the focus and do it myself. It has to auto focus, which is really a headache. It causes a lot of problems when you're dealing with certain types of textures. As far as the top of the phone goes with the gap, I wish I had one here to show you. As far as that little gap in the center of the screen that they're going to be doing on the iPhone 10, I could live without that. I think I like a more uniform look. I don't really need the video to kind of wrap around that little area where they have at the top to accommodate not just the front-facing camera, but also the proximity sensor and the facial recognition scanner. And I could also live with the phone that was thick enough so that the camera bump didn't stick out from the back. That would be fine. You know, this little, what is it, like a millimeter or two here on the back, just make the phone a little thicker. Is anyone really dying because their phone isn't, you know, super, super thin? Because what happens, like with mine, I've already cracked this. Like, I cracked this probably within 2 weeks of having it. And I'm pretty good with my phones. You know, I've already got a case on them. Always take good care of them. But you set that thing down on its back, you're going to crack the camera lens eventually. You set it down on the front, and I hope you have tempered glass, because you know every time you set something down on the front, the phone's going to get dirty. It's going to pick things up. Eventually, you'll crack that too. So, you know, that said, I'm excited about the camera with the iPhone 10, and that's, for me, that's about it. There's not anything that's going to do for me. Now, I know a lot of other people are in love with many of the features that that phone will have, but that's just based on the fact that I don't use a lot of that stuff. You know, I'm pretty simple, I guess, when it comes to phones outside of repairing them. Let's see. Hi from Wisconsin, I take it. Mike, stick to the iPhone SE. I'm getting more than a day of use with mine. Hey, Harvey, by the way, I have your frame here. And I was taking a look at it. And the funny thing is, so Harvey sent me this rose gold custom iPhone SE housing with the small parts included, which I got to tell you, I've had a lot of trouble sometimes with these small parts, which it sounds like I just dropped a couple on the floor. So I'll have to get that when I get done. When I buy the pre-assembled frames with the small parts, a lot of times I find that either there are defective parts or they don't quite fit right. So if you, I have a few, for anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, if you look at my channel, I have a lot of phone conversion videos, or I have a couple anyways where we switch out the back frame on the phone. And a lot of times I end up taking all these little parts like the buttons and the antennas and the charging port and everything out of the existing phone, take out these things from the one that I get, because a lot of times they don't end up working very well. However, Hart, let me see if I... Next week, I am going to have a desktop camera set up so that you all can see what I'm talking about. I don't think this is going to pick up. But this phone has a small dimple. Oh, you can see it, right? It has a small dimple right there in the center of the screen. And Harvey, I was going to mention to you, that looks like it's probably long screw damage. Like somebody put the wrong screw into this hole. It came through and pushed on the finish of the back. So I think that's where that came from. I don't know that there's any way to fix it, but I will do something for this. Thank you for sending it. And I will have something for you later. I'm going to email you on that one. Hey, you hear me? I don't hear you. I can read what you're writing, but as far as chat, it doesn't work that way. So I am also in progress on figuring out how to do this as a Google Hangout so that I can have people come in here and start talking other than just me. So that is in the plans. I can read you, but I can't hear you. Okay, so next. This is pretty messed up. Someone in Memphis, Tennessee, and this article has very little information in it, unfortunately. I'll try to pull it up here so you can see. So this is Memphis, Tennessee. Man accused of shooting phone repairman indicted. This 22-year-old guy was in a Boost Mobile store and apparently ended up getting in a fight with someone over his phone or his phone repair, shot the guy, 24-year-old Rashad Awad. Johnson pulls out a gun and shoots him four times. I can't imagine. I just got a picture of this guy on the screen somehow. How'd I do that? That was bizarre. Anyways, if you want to look up the article, this one is on WMCActionNews5.com. There are a number of other media outlets that have the same story. And again, it's only like two paragraphs, so we don't have a lot to go on. But really messed up, you know, especially when that's something that is very close to home for us. You know, we work on people's phones all the time. And when people have a broken phone, they're typically not in a real, you know, happy, jovial mood. So to see that something escalated at some point while this person was having his phone repaired to the point where he shot someone, obviously the shooter has some serious problems, but really sad. This guy ends up getting killed in his store after servicing a customer. I mean, how upset can you get about a phone to the point where you shoot someone? I am just, I'm just blown away by that, but that's what's in my news feed. A lot of bad stuff happening lately. A cell phone fell on face. This is a great one. You got to see this. This is awesome. So in New Zealand, I didn't know this, but in New Zealand, they have something called the ACC, and this has to do with healthcare. It's basically an accident. It's called accident something or other coverage. So basically, when no one is at fault, they have a system that takes care of medical bills. And apparently, in the last 2 years, they have paid $10,000 to people whose phones have fallen on their face, I imagine because they're laying in bed holding the phone up like this, or they have injured their back by bending over to pick up their phone. Okay, that's weird. That is just bizarre to me. You hurt yourself because, and I gotta say, I've actually seen this happen before. It wasn't me, but I've seen someone holding their phone and lost their grip and the phone fell and hit him in the face. And I really shouldn't have laughed, but it was funny. Like, you'd have to see it. Okay, so here are, according to businessinsider.com, the best five smartphones that you can buy right now. I thought you'd be interested in this. If you're thinking about getting a phone, here are some that you might want to consider. Number five, they have the OnePlus 5. I wish I could tell you a lot about this phone. I have not even used one yet. What they're saying is that it is missing some premium features. They don't have wireless charging or iris scanning. Okay, that doesn't worry me too much. But minus the wireless charging, it sounds like quite an impressive phone for the price, $479, $220 cheaper than the iPhone 8 base model. Number 4, they have the Essential phone, which was really a surprise because I didn't think that the Essential phone got a whole lot of great reviews overall. But they are calling it the 4th best phone that you can buy, base model starting at $699. I'd really like to get my hands on one of those also. I have not used the Essential phone yet. At number 3, they put the Google Pixel and Pixel XL. Unlike the S8, the Pixel runs pure Android. So that was obviously one of the selling features about the Pixel. And the base model starts at $649. They will be revealing the Pixel 2 this October, which supposedly will have some sort of major improvement. Not sure what that's going to be. At number 2, they have the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. Don't have to say much about that, except that you're going to be shelling out $929.99 for that one. Or you can always get yourself an iPhone 8 or 8 Plus, which is at the number 1 position, for, at least for this article, for recommended phones starting at $699. And of course, the 8 Plus at $799. All right, let's go back to the chat. Let's see. Whoa, sorry, my chat's moving a little faster. I thought that would happen eventually. Hey, you hear me? From Pakistan, Mr. Abdul Karim from Pakistan. Can't help you with that one. Throw some water on her. I don't know what to tell you. Let's see. We need a cell phone harness strapped to her. Have you seen... Okay, I'll tell you what you need. Harvey, that is a good call. And you have to see this. This is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was actually, if I can find it, hopefully I can find it. Give me 1 second here. Images. Nope. Now that you mentioned that, just actually reminded me of something. It's one of the goofiest things I've ever seen. Okay, so I was watching like some weird late night advertisement. And let's see if I can get this on the screen. And it's kind of a small image. But this is a real deal, apparently. So what you need is this. If I can get it centered. Can we see that? This is the Gojo hands-free adjustable headset for your phone. This is what you can use to keep your phone from falling onto your face. Yes, it's a real thing. I kid you not. I saw this on late night, and I swear, I think it's a real thing anyways. Maybe it is some kind of parody. But these guys say that you can strap anything from a small phone up to a laptop to your head and it'll hold it in place. So maybe that's the answer for anyone who is in the habit of dropping their cell phone on their face. And if the image quality looks crappy today, my apologies. The ingestion settings or whatever for YouTube, like I said, it was all set up to work perfectly. And then as soon as I started broadcasting, it says that I'm supposed to be at a different resolution than I am. And I can't figure out why that happened. But next week, I will have it worked out for sure. Please, you got to understand. Well, I don't know what to tell you, Abdul. That's good advice. Let's see, but you can't see the screen. Oh, that's true. You know, they didn't really design that with smartphones in mind. So that's not going to help everyone. If you get one of these, will you use it for an entire day? No. If I got one of those, I would try. Actually, if I got one of those, I might wear it as a gag. Just, you know what? It might make a good reaction video. Like maybe start up. It would probably make a great thumbnail for my next live broadcast, live stream. I'll just put that on and say, yeah, I'm advocating the Gojo. Hello. So, maybe I'll do that as a product review. I'll do the Gojo headset. And that would, God, I'm thinking of so much comedy material that would work with right now. Would I wear that all day? I wouldn't wear it all day, but I'd wear it long enough to get some reactions for sure. All right, this is not news, but Ian Poulter is very upset because people are using their cell phones at golfing events. Did you know this? I know. I got to admit, it is kind of irritating, and this is one that I kind of went into briefly on a podcast at one time. I'm not a huge golf fan, but I've, you know, watched golf occasionally, and when someone's trying to concentrate and make a shot, and then, you know, they ask all of the spectators to put their phones on silent, well, apparently... This gentleman, the 41-year-old Englishman, got very upset because he was like mid-stroke and someone's phone went off And he said, you know, you get distracted on the wrong hole at the wrong time, and it's extremely penal. I don't know what that means. P-E-N-A-L. It's extremely penal, and it's really effing annoying. So I'm not sure that's going to change anything, but maybe PGA will make some sort of adjustment to their regulations and start kicking people out of golf events. I don't know. But I will say that when you're in a movie theater and somebody's phone goes off, you just like have to wonder how far does being inconsiderate go? Take it to the gym. Yeah. Hello, Brahim. Brahim? And I think that was the majority. I did have one other thing that I wanted to go over real quick, and then we'll just kind of do some open forum stuff. One of them was I got a message on Twitter, and it wasn't, I think it was a direct message as far as I can tell, so I don't, because it's pretty long, but I wanted to address at least a couple questions. Actually, I wanted to answer some questions on my channel. That's where we're going. So let me pull this up real quick, because I have been doing everything I can to keep up with my YouTube questions 100%. So these are going to be from yesterday. I'll put them on the screen so that you can see. And if you want to offer any suggestions, be my guest. Okay, let's see if we can get this thing positioned, first of all, so that it's centered. Okay, so I did a video on tips for removing and replacing the iPhone 7 home button. And the question I got, which I can't figure out why this went into the spam section. YouTube does a lot of funny stuff like this, so you have to check your spam, otherwise you're missing a lot of comments. It also says I have two comments and there's only one, so I don't know how this works. In any case, is this like a common problem for the 7? If it is, I'm probably just going to stick with the 6. The iPhone 7, to my knowledge, does not have any problems that are native to the device itself. However, when people repair this phone, you have to be super, super careful because the what they're calling the Turtle IC, which is a chip that is built into right next to where the home button is built onto the home button flex cable, it does not tolerate any stress. So if you are to treat this cable the way that you do an iPhone 6, if you're not very gentle with it, it is very easy to damage. Now, that would also make me suspect that over time, if you drop your phone very often, maybe so, you know, we haven't heard of a lot of people coming in with home button problems outside of when they had a screen changed out. So that's kind of been the big one. The other one right now is that not only are we having problems with people who have changed out their screens with the home button issue, but also we're having people who have upgraded to iOS 11. And I meant to kind of send this message out to everyone. I think I briefly discussed it last week. We are finding that when people upgrade their iPhone to iOS 11, or I think it's 11.0.1 or whatever just came out recently, there is an incompatible chip built into the touch sensor right on the flex cable of the iPhone 7 and 6S. So if someone recently upgraded their iPhone and they have one of these incompatible screens on the phone, they're gonna start having issues or possibly the complete loss of touch functionality. And the unfortunate thing about it is that you may have one supplier or one manufacturer who makes refurbished screen who has a certain percentage of their screens use a flex cable from one supplier and some come from another. So what I'm saying is you might have the same brand that only has problems with certain screens. It's not necessarily all of them. And you might have another supplier who has the majority of their screens working fine and some don't. Long story short is if you have a customer come in with an iPhone 6S or 7 who has recently updated to iOS 11 and they're having problems with the touchscreen, I would start obviously by plugging in a different screen, and if that does not alleviate the problem, or if that does alleviate the problem, then there's a good possibility that there was something wrong on that flex in the cable. And if you have the option, definitely want to send that back to your supplier. And if they went to some cut rate repair shop that does things very, very inexpensively, there's a good possibility that they are using one of these parts, because obviously one of the trade outs on getting something like this that's incompatible is that they sell for cheaper. And that's typically where, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of like a ticking time bomb. Like you install it, it's working fine. A new operating system comes out and it can't handle it basically. So that really sucks if you got your phone repaired recently and you're one of the people who came up with that. So getting back to the questions here real quick. Let's see. So guys, is that showing up? Is it okay if the inside of the charging port is black? Is like black, looks burnt, but it's not. And this is talking about an iPhone 6. And to answer your question, a lot of these Lightning ports do end up looking pretty bad over time, and they still function. If you have any debris inside there, I definitely try to clean it out if you see any signs of corrosion. But I've seen a lot of them that are otherwise healthy, but they do look like they're black on the inside, and I don't know why. I don't know what's causing that. So if you're under warranty, I probably wouldn't worry about it too much. If the phone's acting funny, obviously get it repaired under warranty if you can. But otherwise, yeah, it's really hard to call on that one. Could it lead to problems later on? Possibly. How are they turning black is my question. I really don't understand. And my guess would be maybe aftermarket chargers, because we know that the charging system on iPhones is very sensitive, and it's very specific about what it will work properly with. So don't use any really cheap chargers. If you can, you want to use OEM or MFI. Anytime you get a charger for your iPhone, it should be made for iPhone certified. If it's not, there's a potential for you to have some problems with it. And technically, it will probably be it'll void your warranty, so Apple's not going to help you if you end up doing that. Be skeptical about, $399 chargers you can get at a gas station. Probably not real good for any phone, especially iPhones. Okay, please show how to fix magnetic sensor. I would love to help you, but I need a lot more information than that. This was in response to a Pry Tool review, so I'm really confused on what you're talking about there. Can't help you on that one. Hey there, would like to know if you've done an LCD replacement on one of these without breaking the glass and digitizer. This is in reference to an iPad mini screen replacement. Yes, all the time. I haven't broken an LCD on an iPad mini ever. I've cracked a screen one time, and if you use sufficient heat, take your time, and by all means, coat your Pry Tool with some rubbing alcohol. And if you haven't already seen it, I just did a review on one of the coolest Pry Tools that I've seen come out in a long time. It's called the iPlastics, and I was able to get into an iPad Air the other day, no problem. I've had experience replacing cracked glass, was not perfect, and I know what to avoid now, but I need to know how to remove the digitizer without cracking it. Very thin Pry Tool, you don't want to get under there with anything too thick, because it will put stress on the glass. And again, coating it with rubbing alcohol makes getting through the adhesive much easier. Great video. I have a question. When I acquired my iPhone 6, the screen was cracked in a few locations, mostly near the top. So I had actually responded to this. This gentleman had a problem with the lock button. So he switched out the cable, used my iPhone 6 power button repair video to do it. You can see right over here, that was the iPhone 6 power button replacement, which, congratulations, that takes a lot of patience and a lot of time to get done, and still wasn't working with the lock button. So I replied back to him, it could be a defective lock button, it could be some damage to the connector, try to take a look at it under a microscope. And, going beyond that, there is actually a pin on that connector that you can short to ground with something conductive if you're very careful, because this is where you can start getting into problems if you don't know what you're doing. You can actually power up the phone just by touching that pin for the lock button and anything that's grounded on the phone, but I'm purposely not going to tell anyone where that pin is, because if you can't get a hold of a board level schematic to see it, where it's actually located, then you're probably not at the level of experience where you should be trying to do something like that. It's very easy to damage things if you go poking around at that level. So I'm not refusing to tell him specifically where to go, because I don't want to help him, but I don't want to enable people to start breaking their phones, because that always comes back on me. You told me to do this, now I broke it, it's all your fault. Well, in this situation, even though this is a how-to channel and I like to help people learn how to do stuff, there's a certain point where, you want to know the skill level of the person or the technician that's doing the job before you start giving them information that could end up being bad for them. Not trying to break anyone's phone. I don't want them to break their phone and feel bad about it. Unfortunately, he answered back and he was cool with that. But yes, that would be the next place I would start. If you don't have another power button flex on hand that you can plug in to test, then you could short that pin. And if that's working, then it's got to be the flex cable or the button itself, because sometimes those actuators and the buttons don't function properly. All right, so let's see. You're funny, Harvey. it's great. I would make my girlfriend wear it, because we have a running joke about that after we saw the commercial on TV for the Gojo. Take it to the gym. How to desolder FPC camera connector from S4 Mini. It is very difficult. I haven't worked on an S4 Mini outside of a charge port that I can think of The camera connector, I will tell you this. I actually have a video that I did, and this is a tip I would give for anyone who is working with micro soldering. So one thing that I picked up from the iPad Rehab channel, if you haven't already seen her micro soldering stuff, you should. She's one of the best in the business that makes YouTube videos. You should definitely check out iPad Rehab for micro soldering stuff. And one thing that I learned from her is that the FPC itself will tolerate more heat than you think it will. I mean, if you can imagine, when they manufacture a phone, the logic board has to be raised up to a temperature where the solder will melt so that that FPC can stick down on top of it, right? So why isn't the FPC melting when they install it initially? Well, that is because that whole logic board is pulling the heat away from the plastic piece that's being installed. So to make a long story short, the FPC can be heated up to a temperature where, in most cases, and I would recommend adding some leaded solder to bring the melting point down first, but you should be able to raise it up to a temperature where the solder melts and you can remove it from the board. Now, what the trick that I learned was that the moment that you remove the connector from the logic board, if you're still pointing your hot air at that connector, it's going to disintegrate almost immediately. That's because you no longer have it sitting on the board where that heat is being pulled away from the connector. So if you are to blow hot air onto the connector, and the moment the solder liquefies, you move the hot air away from the FPC and the FPC away from the board so that they're going two different directions, you can, you know, with some practice, get to a point where you can heat them up, remove them, and they're still in working condition. I actually did one, and this is what I recommend everyone does. If you've got some old displays laying around that are broken, that don't work at all, that you can't get any money for, and I think the one that I had was a Galaxy S5 or a Galaxy S6 or something like that, you can start practicing this technique on the flex cable. You can actually heat those up warm enough to where you can remove that connector without causing any damage, obviously, to the flex cable, but you can get an idea of how much heat you can use. And again, you know, this is the big variables, like how much airflow, what temperature do I need to do it. But if you get very familiar with your equipment and you're able to take, you know, just a dead screen and heat up the cable to the point where the FPC comes off without causing it to melt, then you would have a little more confidence about approaching something like removing the camera connector from the S4 Mini. Now, I'd have to take a look on the inside to see what that, you know, what's surrounding that. If it's very tightly packed in and there's anything that's heat sensitive in close proximity, then obviously that's going to complicate matters more. I can't give you a complete tutorial right now, but I will say that understanding that concept of the heat pulling things away from, and really, if you're removing a broken connector, you're not too worried about the one you're taking off, but you're more concerned about not melting the one that you install. So that's where you kind of get a feel for how high do you go with the temperature so that the solder melts, so that you can kind of drop that on there instantly and get it to bond. Practice is probably the shortest answer I can give you. But I would have to pull up a schematic or get a hold of an S4 Mini to take a look at the inside, because I'm not sure where exact, you know, what's in close proximity to that. Fortunately, most of the Samsungs that I've worked with have been pretty doable as far as removing, you know, things off of the logic board itself. But I'll have to get back to you on that one. Off the top of my head, I don't have that answer 100%. My iPhone 6 Plus won't charge or recognize my iPhone 7 headphones. Your iPhone 7 headphones? I'm a little confused. How are you going to plug iPhone 7 headphones into an iPhone 6S Plus? Mike, where's the best place to buy a SIM card reader for Samsung S4? I keep getting a SIM card, cannot connect. Please restart error, figuring that's the issue. I actually have a page where that's linked to. I actually have a video where there's a link to that. If you go to my channel and just search for Galaxy S4 SIM card reader removal or replacement, there's a link there. The good news is that all Galaxy S4s have the exact same SIM card reader. You don't have to worry about them being model specific. However, be aware that it is not always the SIM card reader that is the problem. And I want to say that someone else had another kind of temporary fix where you could put pressure on something on the inside there and it would actually make it start working again. But, you know, that obviously is going to be a short-term solution. But I, you know, for S4s, I use my supplier up until recently out of the Bay Area when they stopped selling in the US. So at this point, I would go to eBay and check the feedback on anyone there who's selling that connect that that part, because they're pretty standard. I mean, there's not much to them really. It is just a SIM card reader. Okay, so I think. Oh, so the other thing was I had a question here from on Twitter. It's kind of a long one, but it's regarding an LG G5 that gets down to 16% and then the battery just shuts off and won't restart without a charge. No low battery warnings, just shuts down. I would suspect that at that point maybe it's dropping voltage because it's getting so low and maybe the battery meter is not 100% accurate. But beyond that, we do know that LG has had a lot of weird problems with their last couple of generations of phones. So as much as I hate to say so, if it's still under warranty, I would probably take it up with LG. My understanding is they're doing really well about taking care of customers that have these problems. And it's discouraging because I always hoped that LG would be one of the companies that stepped up and offered some competition to Samsung and Apple. And it doesn't look like they're really, at least at this point, doing that too well. Also, would you ever consider doing any of your live videos in the early evening instead of the day? I like to join, but I don't get home from work until 5 Central. And yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I would like to do this at times where, the thing about YouTube is they really want you to be consistent about when you broadcast, how many times a week you broadcast. And I've been kind of experimenting with different times of days. And short answer, yes, I definitely want to do something at a different time of day because I know that there are people not only in different time zones, I mean, people on the complete opposite side of the world. And I'd love to be able to interact with people from various geographical locations. So yeah, I'm going to work on that. I will try to get on here and set something up so we can have people that otherwise wouldn't be able to participate be able to come on in and join the live stream. No problem. You're welcome. Thank you for the great answer. You're the best. Oh, thanks, man. Hey, I appreciate it. Any way I can help, I will. I know that there's a don't give please bro solutions thing, so I'm in favor of that. You know, I'm completely behind the idea of helping people to be able to help themselves. But if there's a simple answer for something, or you know, if someone just needs to be pointed the right direction as to where to look, if I have that information, I will do my best to share that with you and hopefully not create any liabilities. That is my only concern, really, is that I don't want to tell someone how to do something that can get them into trouble. So I just try to avoid, you know, higher level stuff. I've been trying to keep this, or my initial thought was to keep this channel focused on do-it-yourself. So I stick with mostly more basic repairs, you know, things that people with some simple tools will be able to accomplish. But I have had people asking me to do, you know, more advanced level stuff like micro soldering, liquid damage recovery, that kind of thing. And I think there are a lot of good resources for that kind of thing out there already. So again, if you haven't already checked it out, iPad Rehab is really good for micro soldering for phones. If you want to look at something like computers, Lewis Rossman has a channel where he does a lot of micro soldering. There's also a guy named Chris Long who does a live stream of micro soldering stuff. And if that's what you're really interested in at this point in time, I'm not going to be doing the same stuff that they do because I have some other things I want to focus on here and bring to this channel. So, and that is in the works right now. I'm figuring out the logistical part of getting people on this channel, you know, during this live stream so that we can have conversations. And so anyone who has a store and would like to discuss, you know, being in the phone repair business, or if you're a vendor, or, you know, anything that's related to this that people can benefit from, I am in the process now of lining up guests to come on so that we can talk. I think through Google Hangouts, we can make that happen. And hopefully the video quality will look good. I'm not sure how good it looks today. If it doesn't, again, my apologies. I'll get that fixed by next week for sure. Lewis curses too much. It's very hard to watch his videos. You know, I'm absolutely not here to make anyone look good or look bad in any way. You know, this is kind of my neutral position. And as far as Lewis goes, he's a very interesting character. There's a lot that you can learn from him. He does curse a lot. When he does tutorial stuff, he tends to be very concise and to the point on a lot of it. When he does things that are kind of more off topic, you know, opinion pieces, they tend to be very long. So I, as much as a lot of his stuff, I enjoy seeing his videos take up quite a bit of time. I like to have like a too long, couldn't watch version because he has a lot of good points to make, but sometimes it takes a little longer than I have to invest in watching, you know, among the other YouTube video channels that I watch. However, I will say that when it gets to any of the tutorials, you know, whether it's mine or his or Jesse Jones or anyone else, if you hit that little playback speed control in the bottom right-hand corner, you can make people talk a lot faster than they do. You know, I can take an hour video and watch it in 30 minutes, which is awesome. And then if I get to the point where, you know, oh, I need to back up and watch that part and I slow it down, it's nice to have those controls on it. And, you know, nothing personal against Lewis, but I agree, Harvey. I get really distracted, and it is a bit off-putting to me, you know, personally. That's just my opinion. When people curse a lot, it's like, yeah, it's not really necessary in many cases. Seems like it's kind of taken away from, you know, people used to curse for emphasis, and now it's just like every other word sometimes. So, you know, if that could have a lot to do with where you live, you know, or what you do for a living, or, you know, or how frustrated you are. I don't know. But I try to keep this family friendly. Hopefully this channel, I don't think I've cursed on here yet. I try to avoid that as much as possible. LGG2D801, is that Sprint? Work fine, but 3G searching network, but not working. The problem is software or hardware. What is a D801? Is that Verizon or Sprint? I have a feeling it's one of the two. I'll have to look that up real quick. Let's take a look. LGD801. Because I can tell you right now that, oh, that's T-Mobile. Is that T-Mobile? Yeah. Or Unlocked. I'm getting confusing info. No, that looks like T-Mobile, right? Yeah, that's interesting. I have not heard of that one. Have you changed out the display? Has it had some sort of repair recently would be my question. Because one of the things about the G2 is that they were notorious for having problems if you left out any tiny little piece of anything from inside the phone. You know, we typically had a lot of problems with the display because there's Kapton tape on the inside that has to be installed to insulate some of the connectors. Otherwise you get, I guess it's like a bleed through of radio frequency or something, but the displays would start going funny after a while. And I could tell you personally from experience, I wouldn't touch an LG G2 from Sprint. I don't know what it is about those phones, but they just seem to be prone to post-repair problems, like to the point where they weren't profitable. You know, we had enough of them come back with problems specifically from that carrier that we were taking a loss, so we decided not to service them. And of course, it's a few generations back now, so we don't really see them come in too much, but it's working fine on 3G. Works fine, but 3G searching network, but not working. The problem is software or hardware. I don't know. That's a good question. I would suspect it is hardware. If it's an unlocked version or you've got it on a different network, I do, you know, the obvious thing would be go in and check the APN settings and make sure everything's working properly there. Does it make phone calls? It's hard to answer that one. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and I don't know what it was about the G2, but they did seem to have more issues than the average phone, at least at the time. And like I said, especially for Sprint, the Verizon ones were kind of goofy sometimes. One of the biggest problems we had was people forgetting to put the proximity sensor cover back in. And if you lost that, you were kind of out of luck. So that was really hard to find. T-Mobile. Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head. I would check for liquid damage. You know, just kind of inspect the internals and see if there looks like, you know, anything under, if you have a microscope, try to take a look under there. But I would start with the software, you know, go and check the APN settings. Can you make a phone call? Can you do anything else on there? Because it really could be either of the above. And I'd be guessing if I tried to tell you what it was. I don't know of any common issues with the G2 where you lose network, but it could be a number of things. All right, so I think that is it. Man, talk about lucky. I almost nailed it to the minute. So we have like a couple minutes left, a couple minutes short of an hour, which was kind of my plan. I try to keep this thing at roughly an hour every week. I appreciate everyone coming on here. This is awesome. I've got some cool stuff coming up. I want to make it happen next week. If it doesn't, it'll be the following week, but definitely want to get some people in here to conversate with and to give some different perspective on other things, you know, part suppliers, other businesses, you name it. So I'm really excited about that. This week I've got some new tool reviews. I did get the, oh, let me give you, if it's handy, I did get something I want to show you real quick. So hang out a second. I'm going to put you on the browser real quick so everything doesn't look goofy. And this is going to be one of my next reviews. So this will be done this week. Just got it. This is the screw pad from Repair X. I've heard good things about this. I have not, this is the first time I've touched it. I opened up the envelope. I had not taken it out. And, you know, I've said this about the iSesamo, and I'll say this about this. Ideas that I had that I never followed through with, which I thought would be awesome, and they went ahead and did it. So this isn't identical, but it's very similar to a concept that, you know, one of those things that you have conversations about and say, hey, I should invent this, and then you never do. Well, someone did something that I thought would be very useful for anyone who's new to the business as far as organization goes, because that's one of the things that we really struggle with. So I'm going to test this thing out, see how it works, and then give you my opinion. And by the way, I think that there was something else I was going to say about tool. Oh, I was going to mention that something about tools. It escapes me. I'll come back to that later. Mike, I just found you today and you already helped me with something. I'm glad I found you. Thanks for your help. No problem. Hey, anytime I can help, especially if it's another guy named Mike, you know, just kidding. Yeah, no problem. I hope that, someone is getting something useful out of this. That is my intention. And, I'm really getting to the point where I love new tools, and I've had a lot of companies saying, hey, do you want to test this out? And that's, to me, that's really cool because, you know, anything that we can find that makes our job a little easier to get done, I want to be able to share with you guys so you can check it out. In any case, that is about it for me for today. So I'm going to give this a couple minutes. I'll keep the chat open because I know there's a delay, but I will be logging off shortly. I want to say thanks to everyone who participated today. I hope that you'll be back on here next week, 2 p.m. I certainly will. And I'll have a whole bunch of new topics to discuss. And with any luck, a guest. So I'm working on that. Hopefully it will happen.